Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
13 tables of action going on in the poker room here today. There'd be more, but I'm sitting at one of their tables. Hi, it's Paul Harrah's. Welcome to The Final Table. And while I'm here in St. Louis, my partner Dennis Phillips is still in the Bahamas at the fantastic Atlantis Resort, where he's been for a week and a half, and wrapping things up at the Poker Stars Caribbean Adventure. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Doing well, Paul. And how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, too. I've had an exciting last few days, and I know you have. And tell us about your adventures at the PCA. How many tournaments have you played, and how have you done?
Actually, I've played quite a bit of cash games. I've only played three tournaments. I've been involved in some meetings with the Poker Stars pros and some of the hierarchy of Poker Stars. I got a lot of things going on new and exciting with Poker Stars. I did play the main event. I played a 1500 and I played a 5K down here. The three tournaments that I did play on it.
Did you cash in
any
of them?
Very good success with it. Did not have any success with any of the three tournaments. Did quite well in the cash games. More than made up for it in the cash games on it.
All right.
Main event ran deep. There were almost 1,600 people, 1,500 and some odd people that were in this tournament. I went out somewhere around 260th, and they paid 224. So I wasn't on the bubble, but I sure wasn't very far from it. On that. Yeah,
did you go out on a horrible beat? Please tell me it was not Ace-King.
No. It was not Ace-King. It was Ace-Jack.
Oh.
But, you know. It wasn't a horrible beat. I did get the money in with the best hand, 3-1 favorite on it. Did read my opponent right. Quick replay of the hand. I've got about 155,000. Average is about 175, so I'm just barely below it. But if you use the 60-40 rule on it, that means I'm probably dead in the middle. So if there were 260 left, I'm probably around 130th place. That's, you know, give or take 10 people.
Yep.
On that. So, the guy to my right, the gentleman was the chip leader at the end of day one. He still had about the same number of chips there on day three now on it, at right at 600,000, but he was to my right. And I got to watch him for about half an hour and observe his play and the way he was playing. And he was playing the deep stack poker here. He had a big stack there in front of him. He could play and push the table a little bit, and he was doing it, and I have no problem with that. That's not a bad way to play when you have more chips than anybody else at the table on that. Anyhow, it comes around. He's the button. I'm the small blind, and another gentleman with about the same amount of chips as myself is the big blind. Folds all the way to him. He makes a standard 2.5 raise on this. At this time, we were playing, that would have been 1,500, 3,000 on it. So he made it about 8,000 out there. I look down at Ace Jack. I know he's going to raise right there with almost any two cards. I have two choices on it. Either play a little small ball and just call him and, you know, not try to build it up till I see a flop, or come right over the top and try and take the pot down right then. Trouble is, he has so many chips and he's been somewhat of an aggressor, and he'll be able to, number one, close the bidding, and number two, have position on me. And if I don't hit something on the flop, if I raise it and he calls me and I don't have anything on the flop, then I'm going to make a huge decision. So I just called him on it. Big blind folded, so we're heads up on it. Flop comes out there, a 5 and a 7 and a queen. Absolutely nothing. Now, again, I know how this guy plays. I know that he's going to be raising with anything there on it. I went ahead and checked, and he makes the standard raise out there. He made... Yeah, it wasn't even a standard raise, hardly, because at this time there's about 17,000 in the pot with the antes, and he bet about 12,000. So, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood that a little over half the pot.
Yep.
Thought about it for a minute, and I called him on it. Turn card comes an ace. All right. Quite sure I've got the best hand now. Not too worried about it. It is the ace of hearts. Puts two hearts out there. There is a possibility of a straight draw there, but not a big one on it. So not too worried about it. I know how aggressive he is. I looked down how many chips I've got left and everything. I went ahead and just checked him. He made just exactly what I knew he would do. He threw a bet out there of 17,000 on it.
Okay.
I looked down at what I had left. If I just call him, it doesn't look good. I'm sure I've got the best hand. It's time to take it down if I can. I raised it to 42,000 on that.
All right.
So at this time, though, I've got, you know, over 40% of my chips in the pot on this.
Yep.
He thought and he thought and he thought, and then he actually says, boy, I can't put you on two pair. I'm all in. Exact words that he said on this thing. And I went in the tank for a minute.
Now, when he says that, what do you think he has?
He has a pair. That's all he has. I almost guarantee he's got as an ace with a weak kicker. The problem is there's a 5 and a 7 sitting on the board, so he could have two pair. If he does, I'm dead on it.
Yeah,
I think
when I
more aggressive.
Yeah, when I hear that from him, I would think one of two hands. Either he's got ace-king, because, you know, any two pair is going to beat him there. But I also would think to myself, you know, he could have been raising with any ace in that situation as the big stack. I'm going to think maybe he's got ace-5 or ace-7, because if he's asking me if I have two pair or if he's worried about me having two pair and he's got ace-5, well, obviously my two pair would be bigger and he probably would be a little bit more cautious there. So after thinking it through yourself, what conclusion did you come to?
Well, I actually by watching him too, and he pretty much told me what it was because he definitely did not want me calling. You could tell by the total way that he was sitting at the table and everything. He was nervous. He wanted just to take the pot down. I look at it, and I have to make a decision here now. I can fold that. I've still got just under 100,000. I can, you know, probably make it to the money and squeak into it or something like that. Do I want to do that, or do I want to try and win this thing? Well, I want to win it. And I think I have the best hand, and I'm going to go with my read, and I called him. And he wilted in a chair and turned over ace-3.
Oh.
And I turned over ace-jack.
Yep.
Unfortunately, and I did say it wrong. It wasn't the ace of hearts that came on the turn. There were two hearts out there, and he had two hearts in his hand.
Oh.
So I did say that wrong. So he had the flush redraw is what he had
on that.
So he had 12 outs. It was a 3-1. I was about 75-25 favorite on the hand. And, of course, the jack of hearts comes on the turn, or on the river.
Mm.
And I'm out. So
yeah.
It's not a bad move by him. He does have a redraw. If he thinks he has the best hand there or thinks I'm on some sort of a weird draw, I don't know what it would be, that's fine. But, you know, I would have rather he folded.
Yeah, absolutely. let me bring in the third member of our team, the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You heard Dennis talking about that hand he played. Any thoughts on it?
Yes. Well, one of the last things, Dennis, you just said was, you know, with him, you're probably just trying to be a little bit nice to him. I think, you know, his all-in play is actually a little poor. My quick thoughts, just hearing this, of course, for the first time here, because you're so likely to call, and he's so likely behind. I think, you know, he might even be able to just possibly call there. I mean, I know you have fold equity, but it's so likely you have a hand by the play that you've made and how the betting went throughout the whole hand. So I don't think his shove is that great of a play at all. He's definitely going to be behind there, and you're so likely to call. So, you know, he had chips, too, you know, and a little bit. You said he had more than average or a ton of chips, was it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he had a ton of chips left. He started out the hand with just under 600,000. So this was even calling.
Yeah, he could have called the 42, see what comes on the river, and then you're probably committed anyway, even if he hits the heart, and you probably might have to pay him off at that point, you know, because I think it might have went runner-runner hearts or something.
Yep.
And that's hard for you to put him on it. You might have to go with it because now the pot's huge. You know, the average person probably would. So, yeah, I don't think his, you know, plays all in on the turn was the best play by him, but, you know, not horrible, but, you know, just not really a cooler, but a little unlucky for you there. That's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that happened. That stinks. Such a big spot. You're going deep and getting ready to make a nice run there, and I guess that's just poker. It happens, but, I don't love his all-in play.
I would agree 100%. And I ran into a little bit of a cooler of my own. I don't think I've had a chance to talk to you about this, Dennis, but when I was in Biloxi this weekend at the Beau Rivage playing in the Southern Poker Championships, I was in one of their early events, a $550 buy-in. We had 345 people, and I cashed. Started off the year with a cash. Came in 15th place, which was really nice.
And I
offer some big thanks to Joe for giving me a heck of a pep talk. In fact, Joe, I'd like you to talk a little bit for our listeners about what you said to me, because when we were getting down into the money, I was seriously short-stacked. The average chip stack was about 130,000, and I was stuck around 50. I would drop down a little bit because I'd, you know, lose blinds and antes, and then I would steal something without a hand and get it back. But I couldn't really get past the 50 or 55,000 chip marker. And when we're coming to the end of the day, I called Joe on a break, and I said, you know what, I'm almost ready to just throw this thing away so that I don't have to come back tomorrow and play, you know, for 11 minutes or something when I could easily be in cash games all day the next day. And Joe told me, you know what, I would kill to be in your spot. Right, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like if I could, you know, somehow get over there and take your spot, you know, I'd love to be there. I mean, you put so much hard work and so much effort in to make it that deep. And then also so many players, and I think I mentioned to you Joe Hashem. That was just off memory, and I might be wrong, but I just seem to recall him having like a pair of deuces or something when he was in the main event. What was it, 05 that he won? And I think he was really short with X amount of people left, you know, well before the final table, and of course goes on to win it, and now he's huge with poker and Poker Stars. You know, so many people are so short at some point in the tournament, and they come back and win it. It's incredible how many people are able to do that. And then you never get to tell your great story of how you were short stacked and came back and won if the, you know, general person, you know, I don't think you did this, Paul, but going one step further, if they're kind of, oh, I'm short, I don't even care, I'm just going to push in with any two here, even though I'm just going to call here, you know, maybe I'm good, you know, I have a weak ace and this guy went all in, I'll call. And then, you know, they're dominated. So, yeah, if you can hang on a little bit. And then I think I also mentioned to you, a lot of people, when they get short, they kind of give up on the fight of paying attention to the reads of the players, paying attention to, you know, putting people on hand, staying in the game, staying in the moment. Because if you do double up and then you catch another hand and double up again, you might be above average now, well above average. And the guy that was the chip leader might be on the way out. And now you need all those reads and tells and profiles that you've built, because hopefully you were paying attention when you were short, as opposed to thinking about watching whatever football game and maybe playing the cash game and not really staying in the moment and giving yourself the best chance to win.
It was great advice, Dennis. And I also remembered what you had said about, you know, not giving up. Even if you're getting short on chips, you shouldn't give up. And We got to that the end of that day, and we had 21 players left at 2 o'clock in the morning. They cut it off in the middle of a round. 2 a.m. is the deadline for tournaments at the Beau. And by the way, Ken Lambert and his crew do a great job with those tournaments down there. So I came back the next day, and just as Joe had instructed me, he said, get a good read on how the people at your table look. And I knew that I would be two off the button when we came back, because when you stop in the middle of a round, the button stays where it is. Not two off the button, but two off the big blind, under the gun, plus one. And I remember you telling a story last year about a Latin American Poker Tour event at which some kid had done what you called the triple twister or something like that, where he decided, you know what, I'm short and I'm going to put some pressure on people. And I could see that the people who were there, some of them were not much more of a stack than I was, and, you know, they were going to kind of play nervous and try to move up a few spots to make a few extra dollars, since we were all in the cash at this point. And I determined if I get anything on that first hand, I'm going to just shove. And my first hand, I've got ace 10 offsuit. And it comes to me. And remember, the blinds are 4 and 8,000 with a $1,000 ante, and we're seven ways, so there's 19,000 in dead money out there. All right, I've got 50,000 or so. I go all in. Everybody folds. I pick up that money. Next hand, I'm under the gun. I got a pair of 10s. Perfect. I'm all in. I pick up the money. Next hand, I'm in the big blind. Before it gets back to me, the two guys who are now the short stacks, all in, all in. I look down at a pair of kings. I call. They miss completely. I triple up, and in three hands, I've gone from 50,000 to 170,000 chips. And all
Dennis,
I'm hearing
can you,
is...
Can you believe how well Paul played those kings?
I know. It was a great strategic moment. I mean, it was one of those things where you look down and you go, I can't believe this is happening. But I'm also hearing Joe's pep talk and Dennis's talk about the triple twister in my head. And, I'm feeling fantastic about this. Anyway, we get down to 15. I'll try to shorten the story up here. We get down to 15, and, again, the blinds are 4 and 8, and a guy in middle position raises to 25. The guy next to him insta-calls 25. Comes back around to me. I'm in the small blind. This is not the next hand, but it was about a half hour later. I'm in the small blind. I look down. I've got kings again. Now, I've got to think to myself, what am I going to do? There's $69,000 out there already, and I'm at about 152. What am I going to do here? If I call, I got to fade two guys with who knows what they have, particularly the guy who just smooth called. If I raise, I'm going to be committing more than half of my stack here, and if I do that, I'm pretty much committed to this hand, because if I get really short here, I'm going to be in serious trouble with only 15 left. So I decide I'm going to shove. 152,000 right in there. The guy who had originally raised insta-called. It was like bang, bang. I'm all in. I call. I mean, it was that quick. And I thought, oh, no, he's got aces. I'm dead. The other guy goes into the tank. He thought for about a minute before he finally folded his hand. Now, the guy who had originally raised and then insta-called my shove had about 175,000 when the hand started. So this is almost his entire stack. When he turns over his cards, I'm shocked. Yes, he has an ace. Not two of them. He has the ace-deuce of hearts.
Oh, my God.
Ace-deuce of hearts. He called off almost his entire stack against me. Now, of course, an ace comes... Of course, an ace comes right in the window, and I'm out of the tournament in 15th place. But I kept thinking to myself, what did he think was going on there? Not only was I shoving, not as the short stack... because I've got, obviously, something here, and I've got a heck of a lot of chips at this point. But even if he thinks that I'm just trying to put a big bluff on here and take this thing down, what about the other player who called behind him when he raised it to 25K? He's got to wonder what he has. He certainly has to think that one of us can beat ace-deuce. Any other ace beats him, and any other pair, he's going to have to have a 30% chance of hitting it. So I was shocked when he turned that over. Now, my question to both of you is, should I not have shoved there? Did I play it wrong?
No. You played it right.
Well,
there's no way in the world
don't
shove there.
I hear Dennis laughing. How much was in the pot, Paul, before you when it came back around to you?
19,000 in blinds and two 25K bets, so $69,000.
Yeah, and you have how much?
I had 152.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty in there. I love the play. I
would have been
perfect.
I would have been very happy if both of them folded. Takes me up to about 220,000, and I'm good. And if that ace doesn't come, now I'm going to have like 320,000, and I'm going to cruise to the final table.
No, I mean, there's so much in the pot already. It's so well worth to take it down or make someone make a bad call, which is unfortunately what happened, and they got lucky on you, but. I like it. Dennis, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any – I don't hesitate there. My chips are in.
Yeah,
so, okay.
I think it's a correct play. I think no matter what else you do, you're going to be in the pot completely, and you're not going to fold them. So get it in, take it down, move on.
I think the only other option – the only other possible option is just to call the 25K. And then when an ace comes on that flop, I can get rid of my kings against two other players. But I don't want to have to fade exactly that situation, and I want those guys out of that pot. Give me those chips.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, I think the all-in is by far the right play with what was in the pot.
Yeah.
And it's just shocking the other guy. You know, and you have to feel bad, too, because you feel like he might have been drawn to just two aces because it's so likely the other guy might have had ace-10 or something and folded.
Yep.
That
was my story. I went out 15th out of 345. In the end, having started day two as the severe short stack, using your pep talk, Joe, and your tournament advice, Dennis, I was able to squeeze out a 15th place finish, and I was happy with that, even if I didn't make it to the final table. That's a pretty good year, a pretty good way to start the year. We've got to take a break here in a couple minutes, and I'm told by our control room that Vanessa has not called in. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we'll get Doug Carley on the phone. He's the tournament circuit pro who has made over $1 million, and no one knows his name. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. First, Dennis, since the show is sponsored by our friends at PokerStars.net, talk about the big announcement last week of PokerStars' new North American Poker Tour.
Yeah, they've announced it that basically they're coming into the North America, into the U.S., and with a vengeance. They're going to take over one of the deep stacks at the Venetian. The main event is going to be raised from a $2,500 to a $5,000 event. Their goal in the next 3 weeks will be to qualify 400 people online to go out there to Vegas to play at the Venetian, to play at the inaugural North American Poker Tour tournament. This will only be the first of many. It looks like number two is going to be out in Connecticut at Mohegan. We're looking at number three and four now, probably another one in the U.S. and one in Canada. If everything goes smoothly, we'll do 8 of them over the course of the year. These are events that are going to be not only major mega events, but they're going to be televised on ESPN. So if you go out there in Vegas right now, it looks like the entire stable, the entire lineup of PokerStars pros from the U.S. will be playing in that first event. And we're going to throw a couple of special parties. We're going to have some celebrities there. We hope to have somewhere around 800 people paying the $5K in it, which would be a huge pot out there for that. And I don't know. The sky's the limit on this thing. It's just taken off by leaps and bounds right now, and I'm so happy to say that PokerStars is going to have their own tournaments in the U.S. now, starting again from February 20th to 24th in the Venetian in Las Vegas. That will be their main event, and they will have several tournaments leading up to it. In fact, the Venetian Deep Stack actually starts January 29th and will run all the way up to that main event.
And will all 4 weeks of that be considered part of the NAPT?
No. The first couple of weeks of it will not be. That will still be just the Venetian Deep Stack. Only when we get about a week from it, then the tournaments are going to be changed over. Then they're going to be running the satellite to make the main event. That's when all the pros are going to start showing up out there. So if you go out there anytime from the middle of February on, I can pretty much guarantee you're going to have tremendous games out there. They've got over 90 tables set up there for the tournament, plus what they have in their regular room. It's going to be huge. You're going to have a ton of people out there playing poker. If you like playing poker, you need to go to Vegas.
Yeah, and by the way, Kathy Raymond and Tim Mix, who run that poker room and are the people in charge of that, they've made that Deep Stack event a big hit 4 times a year, and so they've already got great structures for these things. I've played in a few of them. Dennis, I know you won one last year, and and Joe, you played in them as well, right? I mean, these are just absolutely terrific events, and if you can get out there, you definitely should. If not, stay tuned to the final table. We'll have details for you on them as we go forward. And if that's not enough incentive for you to go out there, they've signed Joanna Krupa, the supermodel, who made an appearance on the PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge. She's going to be the TV host for the tour, so you'll get to see a lot of her both in person and in the ESPN telecast. For more details, you can go to PokerStars.net. And you can always click on the sponsor section of Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. By the way, speaking of the website, if you're not hip to that yet, that's where you can download the podcasts of all of our shows. This is our 49th show of The Final Table. If you missed the previous 48, they're all right there on thechipleader.com. And you can also subscribe via iTunes. Just do a search there for The Final Table. He's Dennis Phillips with Joe McGowan. I'm Paul Harris. We're live at Harris St. Louis and at the PCA in the Bahamas. This is The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Actually, Dennis will be back in St. Louis next week. Or maybe you're flying home tomorrow from the Caribbean. When are you coming back here?
I am. I'm actually heading back to St. Louis tomorrow. I'll be there very, very shortly, and then I've got to head out to Vegas. I've got a charity event on Friday out of Vegas, and then I'll be playing the Heartland Tournament at the Red Rock on Saturday and Sunday out there. So a short, quick little trip to kind of switch suitcases in St. Louis, I guess you'd say. That's about it.
I want to mention a couple of other TV notes here very quickly. One, that the World Series of Poker Europe is going to start airing on ESPN with coverage of their Caesars Cup on January 31st with Team America versus Team Europe. And then they're going to have their main event coverage starting on February 7th. I do that as a plug for our friends Lon McCarron and Norman Chad, who will be doing that along with Kara Scott. And then, as I mentioned last week, Dennis is going to be on High Stakes Poker and Poker After Dark in March. The first one of those will be the Poker After Dark cash game the week of March 15th and also the following week. And in that following week, Dennis will also be in the first of three episodes of High Stakes Poker. The new season of High Stakes Poker starts February 14th, but Dennis won't be on there until the middle of March. Now, a couple of bizarre stories I've got to bring up here. One of them is a weird prop bet. And I'll tell you what, Jeremy, while we're waiting here, Doug on the line, let's bring back the poker coach, Joe McGowan, on the other line, so that he and Dennis can both give their input on this. Because we've all done weird prop bets through the years. And listen to this one. Joe Seabach, another friend of the show, and Gavin Smith, and Jeff Madsen, they've got a last longer bet. Hey, Jeremy, turn Joe's phone line down just a little bit because we're getting some echo from that. Joe Seabach, Gavin Smith, and Jeff Madsen have a last longer bet for the 2010 L.A. Poker Classic, which starts up in a couple of weeks. Listen to this. The first person to bust out of the LAPC will have to get the faces of the remaining two tattooed on his body. The second person to bust out will only have to get the remaining player's face tattooed, and, of course, the one who wins the bet comes out of it unscathed. Even Seabach says this is a sick, sick prop bet, and I'm really just beside myself for ever agreeing to it. Have you ever heard of a prop bet like that?
Okay, you said the magical word, Gavin Smith, in there. Gavin's a good friend, a great guy, tremendous guy to hang around with, and he's always entertaining. But he will literally, I think, do almost anything. And I can just almost guarantee that this prop bet came from him. It had to originate from him on it.
Let me tell you something. I like you two guys.
No, I
like you two guys, and we've had prop bets and last longer bets between the three of us in various events that we've all entered in. There's no way I'm getting a tattoo of either of you anywhere on my body under any circumstances, no matter what.
Dennis, is it too late for you to get in with those guys? Maybe you can get in on it.
Oh yeah. Let me run right down there and catch Joe right now. I can just imagine that. All right. Caricature of me wearing a cardinal hat on Gavin Smith's behind or something. Yeah, there you go. That's just what I want. I would hate to win the bet, much less lose it.
You'd have to figure it'd be those guys, though. If anybody's to do something like that, I'm not shocked that it would be them.
Oh, yeah, they're good guys. They really are. They have a blast. And the other thing about it is they're all pretty good poker players, too.
Yes,
so,
yeah,
very good.
It's going to be interesting.
Absolutely
so
right.
I would love to be the one to take one of those guys out and then have to see if they have to have that tattoo.
All right, here's our other bizarre poker story that I've got to mention to you guys. This is from PokerNews.com. According to a recent Men's Journal article, Mel Gibson likes to cover himself in goo before sitting down at the poker tables. Apparently, this is what they say, Mel Gibson uses a smelly ointment made from cow's brains to help him prepare for the action on the felt. Up in the Air author Walter Kim was privileged to watch the process during a card showdown set up as part of the article. In the article, Kim claims that Mel Gibson told him that the substance was called Selegene and that it helped clean the neurotransmitters. But according to Mel Gibson's publicist, Alan Nyrob, Gibson's magic goo doesn't work. And he knows that because Gibson has lost a lot of money to him, so much so that Nyrob says it'll put his kids through college. Now, I've sat down to a lot of different people at a poker table with all sorts of smells around them. I've never had anybody with cow brain goo spread on them.
Okay, I'm telling you this, though. From what you're saying, I think there has to be some personal testing here. So I think, considering how Mel Gibson seems to be losing money, I should sit down at the table with him, and let's just see whether it affects him or not on that.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
I don't think
Where does he live, by the way? I didn't even know he was a poker player, to be honest.
I didn't either.
I had no idea.
Has he ever showed up at any celebrity event that you've been at?
Never. Never has been. I've seen him on when he shot Maverick, playing it there. The only time I've ever seen him playing cards. There it is. On TV.
Well, I bet there are a lot of good poker players in Hollywood, and I'm sure that Mel would be welcome at their games anytime. Frankly, he's welcome at our game anytime.
Even with the goo?
I think so.
Oh, even with the goo, that's a good question. You know what, Joe? If you're losing at the table and I'm winning, you can smell like anything, you can do anything, you can say anything. I don't care, because we've all been at the table with somebody who was, well, not necessarily body odor, but just annoying and loud or drunk and all that sort of stuff. And frankly, I think 90% of poker players don't care as long as you're losing.
Right.
And as long as you don't show me your tattoo.
Gavin.
That's true.
Yeah. See, I do it a little bit different. I actually, and this is, Joe will like this one. We were in the airport waiting for the bags to come up here at the Bahamas. And it kept going on and on and on. And so we finally got a pool going. We were betting. Each of us kicked $5 in the pot to see whose bag would come up first. So we had a prop bet at the baggage carousel. And I arrived at the hotel here, $35 to the good.
Very, very nice.
I started out on a positive note. There you go.
I love it.
Of course, what the other players don't know is that Dennis had paid off the baggage handlers on the way in. Give him 20 bucks and your bag comes out first.
He probably paid $1,000 just to win the bet.
Yeah, he would. You're absolutely right. Couple of announcements that we have to make for you. We are working on a poker clinic for people in the St. Louis area and in the Midwest. Circle the date of March 6th on your calendar. We're going to do it here at Harrah's St. Louis, our new broadcast home. We will have details on this available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, and in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, probably in a week or so. It will involve Dennis and Joe and our friend Bernard Lee, who finished 15th in the main event himself a few years ago and has done a lot of poker coaching and poker teaching over the last couple of years. He's going to fly in as well to be a part of this. And the curriculum will involve these three pros telling you a lot about how to play and how to be a winning tournament player. We're going to focus this mostly on tournament play, although, Joe, you're going to do some stuff on tells, right?
Yeah, I think for my stuff it'll be, you know, poker, in a cash game and tournament for sure, where it's going to help you whether you're the beginner, you know, expert, whatever, you know, cash game, tournament. The stuff that I'll hopefully, you know, share with everyone on that day should help almost anybody.
And Dennis, you'll be talking about touring and playing in tournaments all around the world?
Absolutely. There'll be a question and answer session in there, which literally ask me anything you want type thing, and I'll just try and be as straightforward as I can on it. We'll also do a lot of hand analysis, situational analysis. Between Bernard and Joe and you, don't sell yourself short there, Paul, and myself. I think we can pretty well handle any question that gets thrown at us. And even in a situational betting, whether we agree or disagree isn't the point. As long as we can say why we would do something and what the possible actions would be and consequences, and give people a lot of insight. Anything you can do. I've got the advantage right now when I travel around these tournaments, being able to sit down with a Barry or a Vanessa or whoever and talk about a hand afterwards and analyze it and get their input. So it always helps. So when you start talking about poker and you start analyzing hand, start talking about play, start talking about the danger hands and the rest of it, it helps your play overall. So I would encourage anybody that wants to try to take their next step, whatever level it happens to be, to come on down to Harrah's and sign up for it, and let's get acquainted.
Yep. March 6th will be the date. We'll have full details on how you can register for this next week on this show, and we're also hoping next week to be able to announce a free roll we're going to do on PokerStars.net. This is the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, coming to you from Harrah's St. Louis and the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure, where Dennis is in the Bahamas. By the way, don't forget, Harrah's has a big event coming up in April. It is their St. Louis's first World Series of Poker circuit event. 2 weeks of play leading up to a $5,000 championship event. There'll be smaller tournaments along the way, with entries from $200 to $300 to $400 to $500 and $1,000 as well. It won't just be No Limit Hold'em. There'll be some stud tournaments, some PLO tournaments. There'll be a seniors No Limit Hold'em event, a ladies No Limit Hold'em event. 2 weeks of events coming up here at Harrah's, the biggest poker room in this section of the country. And you can be a part of this by going to the website, harrahsstlouis.com. And you can also come down here and play live poker in this great poker room. And go for that bad beat, which, as I look over my shoulder now, is up to $419,330. That's
wow.
A huge bad beat. And it explains why we've got 13 tables full of people playing on a Tuesday afternoon at Harrah's St. Louis. Again, for details on the circuit event or anything else, go to the website, harrahsstlouis.com. And we'll be right back with more of the Final Table after this on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Now, let's find out what's coming up next on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
That'll be Jay Jr. and Howard Balzer and Andy Strickland coming up with the Afternoon Saloon right after the Final Table here on 590 The Fan. I'm Paul Harrah's in St. Louis. Dennis Phillips is on the road at the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in the Bahamas, coming back to town in a day or two and then heading to Las Vegas, he said, for a big event at the Red Rock Casino, the big finale of the Heartland Poker Tour. This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches. Did you get some reaction to the reactor down there in Bahamas, Dennis?
Table. I guarantee there is somebody at that table that wants to look at that watch. I even got a better one for you. They had a rock climbing competition that ESPN was filming down here.
Yep.
And they said, well, we got to have somebody to time it because they had Chad Brown and Jason Mercier and several of the other pros climbing the wall. They called me. They immediately thought of my watch and said, can you come over here and do the timing for us on it? So I got to get the reactor watch on ESPN, watching these guys trying to figure out how the heck to climb the walls on it. But this watch is unbelievable. So the most durable watch you'll ever find. It'll be the only watch you ever need to buy. Not only is it attractive, not only is it durable, but it's very practical in the cost, too. Go to Reactor Watch and pick out a watch that you like. Go to thechipleader.com and click on the banner there. And they'll take you right to the site. Check it out. Check out the new Triton. Pretty darn good watch.
Did you climb?
I did not climb.
I knew the answer to that.
The weather down here was cold enough. These guys didn't want to do climbing. But it's either that or go down the water slide.
Whatever happened with that? You told us last week that there was going to be some deal where everybody was going to be going down a water slide for, what was it? Was it a PokerStars commercial, or what was that about?
Yep. They shot about half of it one day, depending on whether you're on day 1A or 1B. The first group of people went out there and did it while we were playing in 1A. It turned even colder day B, and they said, there's just no way we can ask you guys to go out there and do it. The first group tails off out here, because while it's a lot warmer here than in St. Louis, it is not typical Bahamas weather at all on it. And so they did the rock climbing and a couple other things instead. So we did not do the water slide on it.
Tell me about some of your other poker adventures. You mentioned a hand earlier that you got knocked out of the main event with. You played a couple of other events. How did those go?
Well, actually, in the 5K, I've got a hand. I think I misplayed the hand a little bit, to be truthful, but I'm kind of curious what opinion you and Joe would have of it. Fairly early in the tournament, we started out with a decent amount of chips on this thing. We started out with, I think it was about 15,000 out there on it. We're on about fourth level. I've got 17,000. Haven't really chipped up any, haven't lost any. Just kind of playing right there. I'm on the small blind. Little guy under the gun just makes a standard raise, about 3X on it. Gets two more callers. Then the button calls. So now there's four guys in the hand already. I look down at an ace, three of clubs. So I went ahead and made the call, too, with the pot odds I had there. And the guy in the big blind also made the call. So now we're looking at six people looking at the flop. Flop comes out there with the ace of spades, the five of clubs, and the deuce of clubs. And I'm under the gun to do the betting on this thing. I have flop top pair, gut straight shot, and the nut flush draw, and even a straight flush draw potentially with a perfect card on it on there. But in reality, what I have in my hand is I have top pair with no kicker at this present time.
Yep.
With a lot of potential on it. So, and I have five guys behind me still yet in the hand on it. So I checked. The guy in the big blind put the raise out there. Again, a standard raise of about 55% of the pot. So it's a decent amount of money going into it. The original raiser folds. One of the two guys across the table from us calls, comes around to the button, who also calls. So now I have three guys in the puck, and the pot is getting pretty good sized here on it. I've got to make a decision. Do I want to see another card? Can I possibly take it down here? What can I do on this thing maybe to eliminate some of the competition? I could even have the best hand here, or at least I could portray having the best hand on it. The table was not that aggressive. They were laying back a little bit. A lot of times you come with an aggressive bet, you can take the pot down. I decided to do the check raise here. I came back over the top. I actually 3X'd what the guy had bet himself. So, all right, I'm up to, God, I can't even figure this out now. It's about 5,000 now, even at this earlier. It's about a third of my chips that I'm putting in there now on this raise. Guy and the big blind smooth calls me. The other two guys fold, so we're heads up now on it. Turn card comes out there, a blank on it. I checked. This guy bet 3,200. There's a monster pot out there.
Mm-hmm.
But 3,200, if you look at the other way, is about a third of what I have left on it. So what I did was I did the cry call to see the river. River also comes a blank. I check. He shoves the last of his chips in there. I fold, and he shows me pocket fives. He flops a set of fives. So, trying to think. I really would love some help here, guys. How would you have played that different? How, I mean, obviously, had I gotten more aggressive, he wasn't going anywhere. I would have just lost all my chips.
Yep.
But the check raise, what do you think? What do you think, Paul?
Well,
either one.
I think that in a situation like that where you're up against a guy, well, how did he look? Did he look? This is a question that Joe would ask, I know, so I'm going to ask it instead. How did the guy look as you were moving through this hand?
Well, actually, the guy looked fairly confident, but he was one of the tightest guys at the table here on it. And honest to God, right there, if he had ace-king and I made a check raise, I think he'd have laid it down. That's the way he'd been playing. He wasn't the one I was worried about. When he called me, all of a sudden, he's the one I'm worried about. It's like, holy cow, am I in big trouble here?
Right, yeah.
But I was worried more about the other two guys on it. And he smooth called, then it's like, oh, because then the worst hand I put him on is ace king.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think he's probably, you know, got some other, like I couldn't see a two pair with that kind of a flop, but, you know, who knows on it. It's possible he'd have two clubs. That'd be my dream hand for him to have.
Yeah, when you check raise him and he comes back at you, even if he just smooth calls you there, I mean, you said to yourself, well, I'm done with this hand.
Well, what I said to myself is I'm done betting, you know, period. if I don't get a club, I'm history here on this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was quite sure of it.
So, Joe, you want to jump in on this a little bit? Joe, are you there?
Hey,
did we lose Joe?
Dennis, you could have made the straight as well there, correct? Dennis?
Oh, now we've got one, and we don't have the other. Jeremy, did we lose Dennis?
Lost connection.
Oh, okay. No,
Dennis.
Dennis, I've got you, and I've got Joe. Do you guys hear each other?
I can hear you both, guys. I'll try to pick it up because I think you've been trying to ask me. You also could have made the straight there, which of course you'd be pretty happy about. And, you know, it's the type of flop that I think a lot of people really overplay. And I like how you set it up when you talked about it here for the show. You basically love the flop, but realistically, you don't have that much. And against five players and a razor, you know there's likely another ace out there that has you beat. So you're really relying on the draw. So it's the type of hand you can play aggressively, but you're worried you easily can go broke if it goes blank.
I give you credit for getting away from it at the end there. You know, considering you were up against a set, you know, the fact that you decided not to fire another bullet at the end after the guy came back at you after the check raise, I think that was well played.
Can you hear me, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also, too, you know, once Dennis does check raise, you really got to shut down a little bit because it's actually less likely. Really, he could certainly have clubs, but Dennis has the ace of clubs, and Dennis has another club with it, so it's less likely he has clubs. It's more likely he has a made hand. And it also, a lot of people won't chase maybe a flush draw if it's not the nut flush draw, and Dennis has that. So even more less likely that he has clubs. Yes, it would be great if he's calling with the king, ten of clubs, no pair, and just clubs and close to drawn dead, but it's good that Dennis shut it down a little bit and played the hand a little more cautiously and tried to hit, and how upset the other guy would have been that he didn't play it more aggressively. You know, that's a little surprising with a set of fives. He didn't protect his hand a little bit more.
I still, he made such a small bet on the turn, the 3,200. It actually gave me the pot odds to go ahead and put it in there, even though it was a third of my chips.
Right.
In hindsight, I wish he'd have shoved. I would have saved the 3,200.
Save the 3,200.
Absolutely. All right, before we go here, I want to talk about a couple of things related to one of our sponsors, the Poker Players Alliance, who have a victory in hand in the state of Pennsylvania, where the legislature just passed a bill and the governor has signed it, making poker and other table games legal. This will not be good for Atlantic City, which gets a lot of business not just from South Jersey, but also from Philadelphia and eastern Pennsylvania. But poker will be legal in the brick-and-mortar casinos in Pennsylvania in just a few months. Until now, it's only been slot machines. Also, we're waiting to hear from Kentucky's Supreme Court, probably on the 21st of this month, on the ridiculous lawsuit filed by the governor and attorney general there, which would take away the domain names of PokerStars and other websites. This was actually a victory for them in the county court, but once it got appealed, both the appeals court and hopefully now the Kentucky Supreme Court will rule with some reason, I think, to say, you know, this is not illegal in your state, and you have no way to claim the right that you can take away the domain names of all of these big websites. All of this being done, fought for by the Poker Players Alliance. If you're not a member, you should go to the website right now and become one. Go to theppa.org. All right, that's all the time we have this week for the final table. Thanks to the folks here at Harrah's St. Louis. Go to their website, harrahsstlouis.com, to find out about the circuit event coming up in April. And we'll be back here next week, Dennis and I both live and in person at Harrah's, and Joe from the Poker Coach headquarters as well, as we continue with the final table from Harrah's St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and thechipleader.com.